This final file basically compares scaled speed up with non-scaled speed up, and I've essentially gone through this central point already. Namely, if you do speed up at fixed grain size, which means that the problem size is directly proportional to the machine size on at least these simple problems, which are, let's say, really very typical, because any CFD wouldn't get into this class of problem, and the majority of large-scale physics simulations, you will always get linear speed-up. So the scale speed-up will always be linear in the number of processes, because that's what our analysis showed, that the degradation was just a constant factor which only depended on fixed parameters of the machine and the grain size. The alternative obvious interesting speed up is the fixed problem size speed up. You take a given problem and then you increase the number of processes. Well, that's Amdahl's law, or too many cooks spoil the broth. Namely, if you fix the problem and increase the number of processes and look at the speed up formula, then clearly the grain size, which is the number of problem points per processor, is going to go down, because the grain size is directly proportional to 1 over the number of processes. So as I decrease the grain size, I'm going to increase the communication overhead, because communication overhead is an edge over area effect. As I make the amount of information stored in each processor smaller, the edge effects get bigger, and so we get smaller and smaller work done per processor, and then you'd expect, and in fact you see always, the speed up to level off. So this leveling off of the speed up is very typical of fixed, or something like fixed problem size, because that makes the grain size proportional to 1 over the number of processes. So, alright, so that's all I wanted to say, which sort of finishes Tuesday's lecture on about speed up. And it's not, you will find it discussed in not only several papers, it's done in, as I mentioned in the problem set, if you actually look at the online book, Parallel Computing Works, it reproduces a lot of these arguments. It's also done in my older book, Solving Problems in Concurrent Processes, has essentially all this analysis in it. But it's really quite straightforward, and as far as I know, in some sense, that there isn't anything else there is. I mean, this is basically captures the essence of all problems. There are some problems which don't get the same elegant formula, but those are problems with a far more complex algorithmic structure, which are not well represented by these geometrical pictures I've been drawing. But most problems are actually of this geometrical structure, and even when they're not, this general analysis tends to hold. And so are there any questions on speed up?
Place the one speed up with 12.25 forward factor, and then
TCOM is, it's actually sort of interesting, in some sense we made a mistake. Namely, in the machines we originally built, TCOM was comparable to TCALC. Now you could say that's because we used a lousy microprocessor. We used the so-called Intel 8087, which its performance wasn't measured in megaflops. This was the first floating point microprocessor essentially ever built. It had a performance of 1/20th to 1/50th of a megaflop. And we were able to build a communication network, which was clocked to whatever it was, 8 megahertz or something, and it gave you a TCOM comparable to TCALC. Unfortunately, if you now go to a modern microprocessor capable of doing, 100 floating point operations in 10 to the minus 6 seconds, you're going to be very, your communication performance is going to be nowhere near your floating point performance. So TCOM is much larger than the T-calc, and it's a little complicated to say what it is, because there is a huge so-called latency effect. We will discuss this in a little more detail later on. Namely, the real formula, there really isn't a T-com. What there is a T-com which depends on the message size, because the way you send messages between processors is you gather all the data you want, and then you add a header, and you stick it in a buffer, and the system wakes up and sends it over to another node. And the hardware and software overhead of sending a message means that the time to send a message is a constant plus another constant times the number of words transmitted. So I think for something like the SP2 today, the latency is 30 microseconds. So that says that in the time it takes to send a zero-length message, in principle, you could do many thousands of floating-point operations. And so that's actually what saves you there. So what saves you is that you have to go to a large grain size, and you notice that I pointed out that you can identify the points that need to be transmitted, and that's something like all the points on the edge. And so, again, that's a very important technology called blocking in compilers, that you want to make your messages as big as possible. You will also notice, if you look at Laplace's example, it's also the hardest from the point of view of latency. Just because it's got the simplest computation, the natural messages are smaller than for the more complicated force laws. So you will find that actually, say, computational fluid dynamics, which is a much more complicated computation, actually has smaller natural coefficients, but also has much larger messages. And so the latency effects are much smaller. But because you have latency in there, some of the elegance of my argument goes away. The essential points are there, but you tend to be dominated by latency in interesting regimes. But it's essential. So you see two reasons to sort of analyze what needs to be communicated. A, we don't want to ever doubly communicate values, and secondly, we want to block to avoid the latency.